Tonight, glad that we get to study together here in Nehemiah chapter 4. If you haven't been in the class already, there are handouts that were in the little plastic boxes as you come into the auditorium. Feel free to grab one of those real quick or flag down a deacon and get them to grab one for you. Otherwise, just open your Bibles to Nehemiah chapter 4, and I think it'll be pretty easy to follow along this evening. Really been excited about this particular chapter. So we've been saying all along that we're working through looking at how we can rebuild and restore and renew. And that work is well underway here in chapter 4. Jack did a great job on Sunday showing us the teamwork described in chapter 3. And now that team is being threatened with criticisms. And so there's a lot of great lessons for us in this chapter. With our goals, the ones that we'll specifically be focusing on tonight are learning again how to rebuild our devotion to God. Because in the face of this criticism, Nehemiah is really depending on and leaning on God. We'll be talking about depending on God for protection, given some of the attacks that take place in this chapter. Also incorporating prayer in those occasions that call for it, as it does multiple times in this chapter. And then just the leadership that he exercises in helping the people get past some of these criticisms. So I think you'll see that this chapter is really connected to our class goals. Let's start with verse 1. We're going to just read the first three verses. And as we look at these first three verses, I want you to think, how would you summarize this content? How would you describe what these three verses are about? Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 1. It came about that when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and very angry, and he mocked the Jews. He spoke in the presence of his brothers and the wealthy men of Samaria, and he said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones?" Now Tobiah the Ammonite was near him, and he said, "Even what they are building, if a fox should jump on it, he would break their stone wall down." How would you sum up these three verses? What's happening at the beginning of chapter 4? Ridicule, that's a great word. Discouragement. Yeah, anybody that hears this is going to be discouraged. Being mocked. What else? Taunting. Oh, I like that. They're taunting. See? That's right. So it's not just some friendly chatter. There's actual anger. There's frustration that's motivating a lot of this. Yes, sir. I agree. Yeah, he's angry and he wants to get others on his team and get them to be critical of Nehemiah and the people's rebuilding as well. Yes, sir, Ronnie. There you go. So when you disagree with someone's project and then they start to succeed, that can make that anger get even intensified and more strong. So there you go. Very good. So we've got a lot of things to overcome in this chapter. We'll skip this real quick. There we go. A lot of things to overcome in this chapter. I just used the word furious, right? They're critical, and that criticism, they're furious about what he's doing. And it shows up in the way that they're talking to their associates. It shows up in the way they're talking with their family. It mentioned that his brothers were there with him, the wealthy men of Samaria. He's trying to impress these other people. They're absolutely furious. So who would read verse 4 tonight? Verse 4. All right, Jake. There's another one of these really powerful and really brief prayers we always want to appreciate. So the critics are furious in verse 1 through 3, and we see in 4 through 8 that Nehemiah prays and perseveres. So in our class tonight, we'll be looking at those prayers and looking at this spirit of perseverance. In 11 through 14, he prays again. And during this time, when people are very discouraged because of the criticisms and the threats that are being made, then he has to give them a pep talk. It's kind of like the ultimate halftime locker room like rally that he goes through here in verse 11 through 14. And I think that that's really special for us to study. After that, then he adjusts his plans, and we see that in verse 15 to 21. What are we going to have to do differently? It may not be the ideal approach to building a wall, but given these obstacles, given these threats, this is the approach that makes sense so that we can make progress even though we're going to be limited. So he's going to make some adjustments to his plan. And then 22 through 23, he just gives us a little snapshot of what this looked like in these moments that we're all familiar with. What did this look like when you were trying to rest? What did this look like when you're trying to just get a shower? Like, what did this really require of them? And when we can see in those snapshots how diligent they are, it gives us an idea of how diligent they are in the entire chapter. So this is kind of what we're going to cover tonight. This is a good outline. I look forward to your comments. So agree or disagree? Big projects will always be criticized. Yeah, by somebody. There's always going to be somebody, right? There's always going to be somebody that brings their criticism. So nothing about verse 1 through 3 should surprise us. And nothing about criticisms we receive when we're trying to do good works should really surprise us. Sometimes maybe we're surprised by the source. We thought that person was our friend. We thought they would be supportive. But criticism itself should not surprise us. I want you guys to just stop and go ahead. We've read 1 through 3. We've read 4. Who would read 5 through 8? And then we're going to talk about leadership lessons. Who would read 5 through 8 for us? Brother Peters? Excellent. So look at verse 1 through 3 for a minute. How would you describe these criticisms? I mean, are these like well-documented scientific facts where they've done a lot of research and they said, okay, your project just will not fail because we've taken soil samples and we just don't think that the wall... Like, it's not exactly academic-level criticisms. What's going on in verse 1 through 3? Yes, ma'am. Pettiness. Great. So this pettiness, this immaturity, some ego. Yes, sir. I think that's exactly it. They're covering up their own fears, right? Let's mock them and let's talk about how this will never happen, because if this happens, that's bad news for us, right? So let's make light of it. Let's say that, oh, this is nothing to worry about. Yes, sir, Doug. That's great. So there is some national prejudice here among the Ammonites and among the Arabs and among these other groups of people. We don't want the Israelites to be successful. Steve? Very good. Very good. So if the Israelites begin to revolt or rebel against Artaxerxes, then this is going to be trouble for the whole area. When we kind of look at this, all of those are great comments. One of the things I want you to see is that it's an exaggeration, right? When you say, oh, if a fox should jump on it, the whole thing's going to fall over. That's an exaggeration. And isn't that what people who are worried you might actually succeed, people who are nervous about losing their own influence or power, all the comments you guys are saying, isn't that what they tend to do in their criticisms? That'll never work. How will your little rough band of 10 or 12 people ever get that job done? All of these things are exaggerations. And sometimes those really sting, and sometimes those can be discouraging, but we need to remember, wait a minute. That person was exaggerating. Like, this is not some well-researched scientific criticism. This is their own exaggeration. And so we have to stop and not let exaggerations about the difficulty of the task that's set before us, or exaggerations about our ability to finish with God's help, get to us. Because if we have God's help, nothing is going to be too big or too hard. I see a hand? Yes, sir. Okay, I'll agree and disagree. I think that they would like to expect justice, right? They have official approval from the king. This is good, this is right, this is authorized. And yet, I do think that they expected some of the challenges here, maybe just not at this level. Yes, ma'am? Good. Right. That's right. To plant those seeds of doubt and to grow the discouragement that way. What is really important, and I see a couple hands, we'll get to what's really important here, I think, is recognizing what's motivating them, right? And this has come out in some of the comments already. When you are facing especially exaggerated criticism, you've got to acknowledge if it comes from anger and jealousy. Look, if somebody's criticism comes from genuine love, it comes from genuine love and well-being, and they want you to succeed and please the Lord, then we should pay attention to that criticism. But when somebody's criticism is really a reflection of their own shortcomings, their own anger issues, their own jealousy issues, great leaders have to recognize that and just kind of set that aside. Now, I saw Ronnie's hand. I saw other hands. Steve. Let me get Steve. I saw his first. Yes. That's right. Very good. Did you have an extra? That's right. So he's continuing to phrase each of the criticisms as a rhetorical question with the assumed answer is they'll fail, they will fail. And so when it's phrased as a question, sometimes that sets us up to say, well, I'll give him an answer. I'll show him. I'll tell him. Does Nehemiah get in a shouting match? No. Great leaders don't get in a shouting match. We let our work speak for ourselves, right? Instead of getting into a shouting match when we're facing criticism, we stop and we pray about this. We bring it back to God to look for His help in moving forward. And so when we get to verse 6, what's the milestone in verse 6? That's right. The wall is complete, and you fill in the gaps to half the height of the wall. It's just wonderful. Rather than getting into a shouting match, they work that much harder. Don't you love it when you see a basketball team do this? You know, somebody goes on ESPN, and they have some smack talk, and it's like, oh, how are they going to respond? Well, you can call a press conference, and you can criticize the other team, Or you could practice an extra 2 hours and you could just wipe the floor with them on Friday night. That's what I like to see. I love it when instead of getting in a shouting match, you rededicate yourself to what should be done. And Nehemiah does that both in prayer and in effort in verse 5 and verse 6. And so he acknowledges this milestone. Because there are milestones in our life we've got to stop and say, we're not done, but look how far we've come. We're not done, but if you have any doubts about whether or not we can complete this, just look how close we've gotten. And taking time to acknowledge those milestones in our relationships, acknowledge those milestones in our parenting, acknowledge those anniversaries, those milestones in our marriages, all of those things are valuable. Right? Wasn't it awesome when Greg Sells talked on Sunday about how great Bill has done here and all the growth and the work that Bill... Like, it was so cool to hear Greg just speak from his heart about that milestone. Those are really special things and they always help us build momentum. And Nehemiah doesn't do this in a way that just says, look what I did. Instead, his focus is on the workers. His focus is on the laborers. He gives credit to the team that has been described in chapter 3. You know how we got this to half the height? Because God blessed the zeal and the diligence of every one of these volunteers. And this would be impossible without God blessing this amazing group of very dedicated people that we read about in chapter 3. Isn't that a much healthier response to verse 1 through 3? Then we might be tempted to get into some kind of shouting match or some kind of a great discouragement where we throw in the towel way too early. I just love this section. What else do you guys want to say? Anything that comes to your mind? Anything that needs to be reinforced here? Yes, sir, Doug. Oh, let's talk about that, right? The do not forget, verse 4. Return their reproach on their own heads, give them up for plunder in a land of captivity. He seems to be saying, let them have a taste of their own medicine. Let them be taken captive, let their cities be destroyed, and when they come back to rebuild them, let them know how it feels to be discouraged in that process. I think he's looking for a righteous judgment. I think he's not going to take it on himself, right? It might be tempting to take that vengeance for himself. But it's not wrong for him to ask of it. God, if these people are determined, and clearly they are, if they're determined to be unjust and unmerciful and full of pride, then God, you take note of that and you repay them. Yes, sir, Jason? Yes. Very good. It is okay that God to ask God to oppose those who are blocking His will or who are interfering with His will. It's a great prayer. Even in verse 5, do not forgive their iniquity. Let not their sin be blotted out before you, for they have demoralized the builders. There are real consequences to these criticisms. It's a real interruption. And Nehemiah definitely brings that to the Lord in prayer. Very good. Other things you want to pull out of the first 8 verses. All right, I'm going to watch the clock. We got lots to cover tonight. So then we get to verse 9, 10, and 11. We prayed to our God, and because of them we set up a guard against them day and night. Thus in Judah it was said, the strength of the burden bearers is failing, yet there is much rubbish, and we ourselves are unable to rebuild the wall. And our enemies said, they will not know or see until we come among them, kill them, and put a stop to the work. Things get really hard at this point. They're discouraged by the criticisms. They've got some momentum by getting it to half the height. But these conspirators have not backed down. In fact, they've increased their threat, just like Nehemiah's team has increased their efforts. And so I would remind us what was mentioned Sunday, that strong bonds can be formed during those hard times. We always connect this back with people who serve in the military together. They go through really hard times together, and that makes you not just buddies, that makes you like comrades. You know, they're like, we have really been through some hard things together. I think at this initial section, 9, 10, and 11, Nehemiah is learning to distinguish, or not learning, but practicing, distinguishing between an unlikely threat and a clear and present danger. It seems to be in verse 8 to verse 11 that the threat is being talked about. And as long as it's being just talked about and planned, Nehemiah sees that as a golden opportunity to put one more brick on the wall, one more brick on the wall, one more brick on the wall. But it shifts when you come down to verse 12. The Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times they will come up against us from every place where you may turn. After 10 different people from 10 different places all come in and say, Nehemiah, you got to take this one seriously. This is really happening. Then it becomes an actual clear and present danger that he has to address. In Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 12, we have this great nugget of wisdom. Proverbs 27 verse 12, the Bible says to us, a prudent man sees evil and he hides himself. The naive proceeds and pays the penalty. So Nehemiah is prudent enough to notice in verse 12, hey, there's something to this. This is not just some random worry. This is not some random possibility. There is a group of people who have shown themselves to be against us, and they are actively organizing an attack. We have to do something about that. The kind of counterpart here would be Proverbs 26:13. Proverbs chapter 26, verse 13. The sluggard says, there's a lion in the road, a lion in the open square. And this is the lazy man who doesn't want to get up and doesn't want to go to work. He goes, well, why didn't you go to work today? Something bad might happen. A lion might eat me. You know, there's lions out there. I think I'll sit here and watch Netflix. The lazy person always has an excuse not to work. The wise person wants to get as much work done as they can before the danger comes, but recognizes the danger and will not proceed and face the penalty. So that's a great distinguisher there in Proverbs 26 and Proverbs 27. Verse 10 is really important because there's a distinction between the burden bearers, who may have just been volunteers that were like moving rubble out of the way. Like, this is useless, that's useless, this is burned, let's sort these things out. I have been that guy when I worked construction with my dad for the summer. There were times that I had a broom and I was just supposed to sweep up after everybody else. There were times I had a shovel and my only job was to take this crawl space from 2 feet deep to 4 feet deep. And it was just shovel, shovel, shovel. Some people are the burden bearers. Others are the builders. We ourselves are unable to rebuild the wall. It seems that those that would have been lower skilled workers were burden bearers. Those that really knew what they were doing and hanging the gates and all that, we're more builders. There are times that we can just say, why should I keep trying? Because the other half of the team is unsuccessful. Sometimes criticism gets us to doubt ourselves, but sometimes criticism makes us doubt everybody else. And both can be really destructive on a team. Again, think about like my dad with home remodeling. You've got demo day, right? Let's rip everything out. And then you've got your trades that come in and put everything back in. If the demo guys can't get done in their time allotted, why should the plumber rush? They're already going to be behind. You know, if the demo guys can't get their job done, why should the electrician make extra time on his schedule to come, you know, wire up your chandelier? It's not going to happen anyway. You're going to miss your closing date. Whatever. You see how that works. I think that's part of what's going on in verse 10, and it's circulating. Think about that. This is circulating with their fears and their doubts, not just because of what Sanballat and Tobiah have said in their exaggerated criticisms from verse 1 through 3, but now it's like guys hanging out in the break room going, man, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. Are you really going to put in overtime again this weekend? We're never going to get this done. Don't you know that our California team, they're all working from home. Like, it's not going to happen. The teamwork starts to break down. Nehemiah stops and he addresses this. What I think happens there in verse 11 down through verse 15 is that he takes these hard times and begins to mold them into a strong team. Steve, what did you want to add? Good. Yes. Yep. Yes. And that's right. And to begin to make wise and prudent preparations, because this threat was not going away. It was escalating. And they could see that it was escalating, and they get these 10 guys reporting that it's escalating. So they had to have faith, but they had to also get ready. Right? Very good comment. So think about this. His response, as you read and look at 12 through 15, we started with the first 8 verses. And I said, great leaders do this, great leaders do that, great leaders this, that. What do you think about Nehemiah's leadership in this section? What could we copy? What could we imitate in 12 to 15 so that we would respond well to these kind of threats and criticisms? Yes, sir. What could we copy? The courage. Excellent comment. There's lots of courage. Yes, ma'am. Yes. It's exciting to see a leader like that, that is proactive, that does have the forethought, that says, well, this is an obvious weak point. If I was attacking, that's where I'd try to get in. So let's put some guards over in that area. Great point. What else? Yes, sir. Excellent. So that's his halftime pep talk in verse 14 to bring them back to that true foundation of faith and courage. Yes. Yeah, there's something worth fighting for here, right? When we started in chapter 2 and he was launching their vision, casting this vision, he was explaining to them that we've been a reproach and we have to do something about this and we have to do it now. Here, instead of just talking about what generally applies to the whole city, he gets really personal. It's your family that we're fighting to protect. It's your family that we're building to secure. That's a great part of this response. Anything else you guys want to bring out there? I've got my list, but I want to get your comments. Okay, yes, sir, Doug, and then back over to Greg. K-E-A. Keep everlastingly at it. There you go. And that's what he wants them to do. Keep at this. Great, Greg. That's right. Kind of how we said that his short prayers were based in his longer prayers. His short rallying cry is based in a lifelong relationship with God. And when they see that he's totally bought into this and not deterred, they're less deterred. Yes, Ronnie? And then Jack? Yes. Good. So he changes their focus. This is bigger than just a construction process. Jack? Well, remember the Lord and fight for your brothers. Very, very good. Yes, Christy. Excellent. Yeah, so rather than just being paralyzed by the problem, he's putting a plan into place that they can move forward. Blaine, you got anything for us? Very good. So having that put back in front of them, that kind of encouragement to really outbalance the negative that's all around them. Yes, sir, Doug. That's right. He is. Yeah, he's the real deal. You know when you're following him that it's not about him. That it's really about serving God. And it's tremendous. It's tremendous. All right, so here's some of the comments that I had. What is it that we need to do during those hard times that actually can create strong teams? The serious concerns of verse 12 are heard loud and clear. Don't you hate it when you actually can see the problem? You can see the problem coming and you take it to someone and it just gets dismissed. Oh, yeah, yeah, thanks for sharing that. I'll look into that eventually. I've said that before. Half the time I've looked into it, half the time I haven't, right? You've said it before too. But it makes a difference when you know you've been heard. When people take your concern seriously, it's like, you know what? You're right. I will address that. Meet me in the court square tomorrow at 2:00. I'm going to call an assembly for everybody. We're going to do something about this. It's such a different response. And for people to be re-engaged and motivated to face a serious, real, dangerous threat, their concerns need to be heard loud and clear. And we need to make sure they know that we have heard them loud and clear. Then there's clarity again. Clear plans and a clear response is established in verse 13. I stationed men in the lowest parts, behind the wall, the exposed places. I stationed the people in families with their swords, their spears, their bows. I've got the right people with the right tools in the right place. It is a very clear response, and we are going to address this. Verse 14, everyone is brought together. No one is excluded from understanding what adjustments we are making to our regular working here. This is one of the great things about our congregational meetings, is that everybody is called together. Everyone has a chance to hear the plans the elders are setting before us, to think about where the shepherds are leading the sheep. Gotta love verse 14. I had in my notes that not everything calls for a pep talk, but there are those circumstances that call for a very public, very open, encouraging talk. And Nehemiah knows that that is this time. 15. See, faith in God is the foundation of our action. Sorry, the end of verse 14. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, not just the Lord who is holy, but the Lord who is great, the Lord who is awesome. That's the God that we're serving. The reason we can take these actions or because he's with us and we're not alone. What we do know is bigger than what we don't know. This comes back to clarity. We don't know when they're going to attack. We don't know exactly what their strategy will be. Will it be daytime or nighttime? Will it be on the northern side or the southern side? There's things we don't know, and let's admit that. The things we know, what we know about our God, what we know about His covenant, what we know about His holy purposes, what we know about His calling, those are so much bigger than what we don't know. And in times of uncertainty, in times where things are, where we feel very threatened, it's really important to come back to the things that we're clear about. You think about companies that face some kind of financial crisis. They'll come back and say, but these are our core values as a company. This is what our core mission is as a company. And we're going to get through this financial crisis because what we know is bigger than what we don't. I think that's a big part of His cry to them in verse 14 and verse 15. And ideally, you can't have this one every time, but ideally, people will be well positioned to win before the battle begins. You would always like to get your soldiers ready, fully equipped, and fully in place before the attack starts. And so He tries to do that. He doesn't waste any time here getting people where they belong and getting the resources, whether it's the swords or the shields or the spears, the bows, the arrows. He gets them where they need to be. Yes, Steve. Yes. That's great. Even if it's not a perfect plan, we can rally around it. And sometimes you can get by with a C-plus plan if you just get everybody working on it. Yes, sir, Jason. Tremendous. Tremendous. And when we read this chapter, it all seems so easy. It all seems so logical. It just makes sense. And it resonates with us, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't this chapter just like, yeah, I'll follow a leader like that. It resonates with us. But this isn't easy. To Doug's point, you know, it's not every leader that can do this. And when you have people that are trying to do that, they're giving their best and their heart and their effort to be clear and to be responsive and to be listening and to be establishing resources to address the crisis, man, they're to be appreciated just like we appreciate Nehemiah. All right, so then I've been waiting for this, verse 16. From that day on, if their wall is at half the height and they did this in 52 days, assume with me that we're somewhere around day 20 to day 30, okay? Somewhere in the middle, because we got it half the height. So that means the next 30 days, everything will be different. From that day on, half of my servants carried on the work, while half of them held the spears, the shields, the bows, and the breastplates, and the captains were behind the whole house of Judah. Everything is different from that day on, because His priorities are being chosen ruthlessly. I love this phrase, ruthless prioritization. Sheryl Sandberg, CCO of Facebook, when she was trying to take Facebook public and become a billionaire, that was kind of high on her to-do list. She's like, yes, I think I would like to be a billionaire. So she says in her interviews, she only did two things during those few months. Spent time with her family, and worked on the IPO for the stock exchange. Ruthless prioritization. She's only doing two things. Now, that's about money. Let's find something more noble with these firefighters. I know it's hard to read this, but these firefighters have spent 30 hours fighting the wildfires in Gatlinburg. They took a much-deserved break right there on the sidewalk, there, asleep on the concrete, after being absolutely exhausted, defending others, serving others. This to me is just the best picture to show noble, ruthless prioritization. There was nothing more important for these guys than trying to put out that fire. This is from December 2016, and it's the Johnson City Fire Department from northeastern Tennessee. This was a photo from CNN. I just love this picture. Because there they are in their uniforms, exhausted. And when we read the rest of this chapter from 16 to 23, they're exhausted, but they are keeping their priorities. We read this, be on guard for us by night, a laborer by day. None of us removed our clothes. Each took his weapon, even to the water. Those firefighters, they didn't have enough time for a change of clothes or a nice four-course meal. They had a mission. And we can't do this 365 days a year. No one can crank it up to 11 and hold it at maximum effort all the time. But for a season, for a small amount of time, for a few months, you can crank it up to 11 and finish important work. And what he does in verse 16 to the end of the chapter is he changes their plans without changing the vision. They are going to build this wall. But now they're going to do it with a sword in one hand and tools in the other. And that wasn't the original plan. That plan has had to be adjusted. But the vision has not changed. Two teams are formed to meet the most pressing needs. Builders, defenders. Builders, defenders. He's got to have those two teams. And when we face these obstacles that require us to change our plans, we have to figure out what's most important, what are our key priorities, and align our resources with those priorities. He says the captains were behind the whole house of Judah in verse 16. It seems that there's backup position. That if either of these teams starts to struggle, we have some backup here. There is a little bit of a plan B to pull them along. The work continues, and everybody knows it's going slower now. But slower is better than going in reverse, because at least they're still moving forward in verse 17. Nehemiah knows that his role now has shifted as well. He doesn't just get to be giving the big speeches like verse 14. Now he's got to be constantly on the lookout. And I love that the guy with the sword is just as important as the guy with the trumpet. The trumpeter is there. And his job is going to be to sound that trumpet if they all need to rally together because someone is under attack. And so you've got your lookout, and that's a key role. You've got your trumpeter to communicate, to get everybody pulled together. Then you've got your soldiers, and you've got your workers. All of these work hand in hand. It's that same kind of brilliant teamwork from chapter 3. Now it's playing out, just slightly adjusted here in chapter 4. Everybody could rally together to defeat an enemy that none of them could defeat alone. Yes, Doug, you had a comment? That's right. Because now that they've been opposed, we are all pulling together. We've decided we're not going to scatter. We're not going to be crushed. We're going to be a stronger team than we were when we started. That is exactly what we have to be as a church. There are going to be threats. There are going to be difficulties. There are going to be criticisms. But we have to pull together rather than allow those threats to divide us. So here's your application questions before the buzzer gets us. How can depending on God help us to overcome our unjust critics? When we face the trouble that's described in verse 1 through 3, we can turn to those prayers like Nehemiah does. We can really depend on God like he talks about in verse 14. Think about this. What milestones have you already reached that you need to talk about, that you need to appreciate? Did we come this far in our marriage? We've come this far in our project. We've come this far in raising our kids. We've come this far in teaching the Bible class. We've come this far in the building project, whatever it is. What are those milestones that are reached that should be stopped and appreciated the way he appreciates this in verse 6? When do we need the pep talks? When do we need those inspirational speeches? Someone that can say, trust in God, remember who you're fighting for. Maybe there's somebody in your family or in your life, a friend that you can reach out to this week and you can be that inspiring voice for them. And what pressing needs call for a season of intense work and ruthless prioritization? That, hey, this is hard, but it's worth it. No one ever said it was going to be easy, but I'm going to make this a priority. And just like those firefighters, we're not giving up until the job is done. I hope you've enjoyed chapter 4 tonight. Your comments have been outstanding. I look forward to being back with you soon. Jack has got chapter 5 for Sunday. Please, if you don't have a copy of the handouts, lesson 5 is in the boxes in the lobby.